Well, this is so exciting. And again, thanks to Gary Buffo and all the folks at Pure Luxury Limousine for getting our guest up from Corte Madera. He's got to head back to San Francisco, but he's in the studio with us. He's a Drive Hall of Famer, a regular on this show. And the first time we've met face-to-face, and he's in the studio, he is Mr. Rick Wilson, a Republican political strategist, media consultant, author, and all-around cool guy. And it's so cool to have you in the studio, my friend.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it, and I'm glad I could make it out into the beautiful hills of the Santa Rosa region. And second time here in a couple of days, so I'm pretty happy.
That's
about
right.
That.
You were here, and we had the Jordan people in yesterday, and we talked all about the big Halloween slash
absolutely
whatever party. And you were there. You're a friend of John Jordan. Explain that.
Well, you know, we met in politics a while ago, and I just love the guy to death. And he puts on a hell of a show.
It's one of
my favorite places in the world out there at the Vineyard. It's just absolutely gorgeous, and they produce just amazing wine. And he is a superlative host in every way.
Yeah, and we looked at a bunch of the photos yesterday and talked about the party. And you know, we had gotten the amazing invite with mummy thing and the whole. And my son's in town, so I thought, normally I would go. Now I'm so pissed that I didn't just grab my son and both of us go, but you were there with your wife.
Any party with live camels is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. We saw some of those photos, too. The new book is Everything Trump Touches Dies, A Republican Strategist Gets Real About the Worst President Ever. He is Rick Wilson. First off, let's talk about today. Give me your thoughts on this whole thing.
Sure. I think this is a really dark day.
Yeah.
And, you know, any time where someone feels motivated to send bombs to two ex-presidents and to a whole bunch of media people, and a lot of those guys at CNN, those are my friends.
Yeah.
And
you're on there a lot.
When that happened today, I was, you know, texting folks that I knew that were in that building, in that room.
And they all got evacuated.
And they were all on the street within a few minutes. Thank goodness, because the NYPD does the amazing job they always do on these things. But, you know, and there are political figures in this country being targeted for political violence. And, you know, the argument that, oh, well, the bombs didn't go off, so it's not really the same thing. I'm sorry. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I condemned when Steve Scalise was shot by a guy who was a crazed Bernie follower. Political violence is a red line. You don't cross it. If you think it's a good thing or think it's something that's going to be a net benefit for your party or for your side of a movement, you're out of your damn mind. And so, you know, this is the kind of thing that in this era where our civility and our guardrails are totally gone, I look at it as a major concern. I think it's a huge risk factor for the politics and then for the safety and security of this country.
And I think it's only beginning at this point. I mean, we're seeing, you know, and if and we were talking to Eric Bollert today from Media Matters, Share Blue, our Congressman Mike Thompson, and, you know, if the hate speech doesn't stop, it's just going to get worse, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop. I can't wait to see what he's going to say tonight at the next rally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of dreading the fact that he's doing a rally tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Because every one of these rallies, every single one for the last 2 years, he's pointed at CNN and said, they're the enemy of the people.
Exactly.
They're fake news. They're the people that are against you. They're your enemy. And I'm sorry, but there's got to be a point where you take responsibility for the words you put out there. And this president uses language in a reckless way, in a dangerous way.
And it's all about fear.
And if you know, to put the shoe on the other foot, and not just the two cookway argument, but if the shoe was on the other foot and Barack Obama every single day went out and pointed at Fox and said, you're the enemy of the people.
Right.
And when Obama criticized Fox a few times, you know what Republicans did? They lost their damn minds. They thought it was so inappropriate for a president to criticize a media outlet. And now we've got a president who has called CNN repeatedly at every one of these rallies and many, many other times on Twitter and in speeches, an enemy of the people. And at some point, you know, I know that Donald Trump will never be held accountable by anybody in his administration or his White House.
Or his base.
Or his base. But at some point, you know, the media, if they're going to be the enemy of Donald Trump, then they need to stop covering the rallies. They need to stop covering the speeches. They need to stop covering the bluster and the tweeting. And if they want to choke the oxygen out of the room on this guy, you know, that's the only way, I think, in some in a meaningful way, that they can do something that causes Donald Trump hurt, which is to say they remove attention from his behavior.
Right.
They remove the attention of him saying they're the enemy of the people. They stop covering that completely. They go dark when he gets to that part of the speech because he depends on that to stoke his base up.
Yeah. And what's so amazing to me today among, well, it's always amazing every day what's going on, but the fact that some of Trump's base today is saying that these bomb things were a Democratic ploy, for the midterms. Oh, my God.
This whole thing, oh, it's a false flag. The same people that thought Hillary Clinton ran a global sex trafficking ring from the basement of a pizza restaurant are now saying that this must obviously be fake news. The whole thing is remarkable in terms of how divorced from reality it is. It has really reached the point where, you know, they're desperately trying to not have a situation where he's ever held accountable.
Right.
So they have to make up every possible excuse. You know, and if this had targeted Republicans, it would have been a plot by Antifa and Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, so you can't win on this because they're post-rational.
And the Republicans are still, as far as I can tell today, silent on what happened today. They're so worried about 2 weeks from yesterday that they're just not going to say anything.
A few people have sort of poked their head up a little bit.
Well,
on
Jeff
it.
Flake, I saw
right,
him on
Jeff,
CNN.
Jeff Flake.
But, you know.
And a couple of other folks, but I haven't... maybe it's happened because I've been in and out of book signing events and other things all day.
And limos,
yeah. Well, there's that. Don't they know who I am? But, you know, a lot of them have been very restrained because they don't want to look at the real question that underpins this is what is the role that Donald Trump has played in creating this atmosphere?
Exactly.
What is the role Donald Trump has played in fostering and pushing this enemy of the people thing forward? Because every single person on this list is on Donald Trump's Twitter hate list.
Yeah, lock
every
her
single
up,
one of them.
Mm-hmm. Hillary and the Clintons Obama. It's all Obama's fault. And
So when anytime you try to send a bomb, the two Democratic presidents and a former Democratic candidate and Democratic members of Congress and media outlets, call me crazy. But, you know, Occam's...
I will not.
Occam's razor here kind of indicates where this is coming from.
Oh, God. What do you foresee? I mean, how bad is this going to get?
Well, look, I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon.
No,
I don't think either. Because this kind of rhetoric is integral to Donald Trump's politics and his image and the way he has approached his... You know, to use a word I think barely applies, his governance of this country. It involves this incredibly divisive rhetoric and this idea that he has to have an enemy, and his main enemy isn't Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong Un,
right?
Or
oh, he's
Maduro,
in love with Kim Jong Un.
They fell in love, but it's the media.
Exactly.
And you know, when you start using that kind of rhetoric as a president. When you start saying that kind of thing as a president, and when you've broken the truth so hard on so many things, and when you're basically distrusted by 65% of the American people, he's put this country in a very tough spot.
Right.
And you know, the person that built these bombs, we don't know who it is yet. We don't know what their sanity level is yet. But just as when you found a guy who went out and shot up a whole bunch of Republicans on a baseball field, and discovered he was a Bernie guy. Well, guess what? You follow the trail of motivation here, and somebody who's trying to blow up a bunch of Democratic candidates and former presidents and a news network that the president identifies as the liberal enemy. Well, I'm sorry. Unless it's the craftiest plot of all time by the Democratic Party, and since the Democratic Party largely can't organize a two-car motorcade,
I agree. I agree, and I'm a Democrat.
I'm guessing that this is not exactly the mastermind, the work of evil genius masterminds in their volcano lairs somewhere.
Mike and I were talking about that off air earlier today. The same thing. It's just unbelievable. And if he does not tamp down on the hate speech and the rhetoric, this is just going to, something big's going to happen. Now, remember, and I talked to Eric Bollert and our Congressman Mike Thompson about this earlier today. Remember in 2016, he said, I could shoot a guy on Fifth Avenue and not lose any voters. I mean, I think that's correct. I mean, his base would still go, oh, well, I'm sure the guy deserved it. It was a Democratic guy or a Democratic plot.
If Donald Trump went out and said, I think these bombings were a really good idea, and I think they did something good for the country. If he went out and said something like that, there would be a large part of his base that would
agree.
Not blink an eye.
Yeah.
And they would say, well, yeah, they deserve it. They're libtards. We're gonna pwn the libs now with more kinetic with more kinetic solutions. And unfortunately, Trumpism in some ways requires that you put all your morals in a basket somewhere and you just follow the leader.
Right. And we have seen that in history.
A couple times. I wrote a piece in the Daily Beast today about how nationalism, you know, in the last 150 years, we've seen this story play out over and over again. And nationalism becomes ethnic nationalism, and ethnic nationalism becomes ethnic cleansing, and ethnic cleansing becomes genocide. And, you know, it would be a longer reach if Donald Trump didn't behave with all the hallmarks of an authoritarian statist. And so, you know, we end up in this moment where you got to be really nervous about the way he speaks and behaves.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't watch these rallies. I see lowlights on CNN the next day or whatever. But tonight, I will tune in just because everyone's going to watch to see what the hell he's going to say.
Yeah, I'm going to predict that Donald Trump will come out and put just enough out there to say these bombings are totally wrong and I condemn them.
Exactly.
But
which is what he did today.
There will always be a codicil and something that he's elided through or over. There will always be a sort of wink and a nod. And the concern I have is like the Charlottesville situation.
Right.
You know, the guy comes out, he's dragged kicking and screaming to issue the most anodyne statement possible. This wasn't really good, and you know, we condemn it. And I remember when he was, you know, pinned down on David Duke at one point, he goes, I disavow, okay? I disavow, okay? And yeah, that seemed really sincere. So
yeah,
I'm going to predict he will do enough tonight, because I guarantee you Kellyanne Conway and Jared and Ivanka and have been in there screaming their heads off all day today.
Right.
And, you know, but this is President Oppositional Defiant Disorder. So he's probably going to say just enough. And then by tomorrow, it'll be some tweet. You know, it's the bombs didn't go off at CNN, but, you know, fake news needs to be blah, blah, blah. The guy is just, it's insufferable.
Rick Wilson in the studio with us. The book is Everything Trump Touches Dies. A Republican Strategist Gets Real About the Worst President Ever. Mike's got a question.
Hey, as far as Congress, some of the more moderate members, Jeff Flake, Ben Sasse, Marco Rubio, we see them making comments from time to time saying about certain policy proposals or things like that. They sort of start towing the line against the president, but when it comes down to voting, we never actually see them take a stance against any of these proposals. Do you see at any point them turning and taking a stand against any of these policy proposals that come up?
I think what you're going to end up seeing at some point is that Donald Trump is going to have a different economic climate and a different political climate in the country. And if we end up in 2020, remember, this was the easy year for the Republicans in the Senate. This was the good year. There were only eight seats up in the Senate, and only five of them were even vaguely in competition. Well, the next time when 24 Republicans are up to bat and you know, the economy may not look like it looks right now. We're seeing a lot of signs in the stock market and elsewhere.
Yeah, of course, and he's bragging his ass off right. about all that.
Exactly. He's writing checks he can't cash, which is a not unusual thing for Donald Trump. but what we're going to see is these guys are going to have their political lives on the line, and he's not going to save them. In fact, he's already right now this year going around saying, oh, well, you know, the Republicans are going to lose the House, but it's not my fault. I have nothing to do with it. They're just weak.
Yeah, he's blaming Ryan and McConnell.
He's blaming McConnell. He's blaming Ryan. He's blaming McCarthy. And so the motivation for them to stay completely in line with Trump is driven by their fear of his base. But one thing that will overcome all fear and hesitation with these guys is their survival instinct to hold their seats in 2020.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen in 2 weeks?
Well, I think the Democrats have an extraordinarily good chance to take the House. I mean, look, the Democrats can get home. There's 25 different pathways they can get home to win a majority in the House. There are a lot of different scenarios where they, you know, and I think the number is going to be somewhere in the 30s, not in the 50s. But there are a lot of seats the Republicans have just completely given up on.
That's what I heard yesterday or recently, you know, just doing some research that they're not spending money in a lot of different election areas.
They've written off about 25 seats completely. Yeah. They just walked away.
Yeah.
They just said, nope, you dead man walking. And on the Senate side, look, I think it was always a difficult proposition for the Democrats to take the Senate.
Sure.
I've told people for months and months and months that the Democrats winning the Senate is a 100-to-1 shot. And right now there have been a couple of polls out that have shown that the Republicans will get a net 1 or maybe a net 2. That does not surprise me this year at all. Not a bit. North Dakota is one of the seats the Republicans will pick up because it's North Dakota. I mean, it's North Dakota. You know, unless the Republican candidate's name is you know, Dr. Atheist Von Gay, the celebrity abortionist, they're going to win in North Dakota. It's just not a state that's really in play.
Oh God.
So they've been very competitive in a couple of their places, but places the GOP thought they would pick up in Wisconsin and in West Virginia. Nope, not going to happen.
As far as the House, assuming if the Democrats do get the House, what do you foresee happening as a Republican strategist?
Well, here's what I think happens. And there are going to be a lot of people in the House that are going to want to do the full-on charge at the bull for impeachment.
Right.
What will happen if they're smart? And that's always a huge,
that's a good question.
Huge leap of faith.
I agree.
I always tell people, you know, the reason guys like me were able to beat so many Democratic candidates, we took 1,000 seats away from Democrats in the last 10 years, right? The reason we were able to do it wasn't because Democrats were such you know, that we were such geniuses. It's that they were just so bad at politics. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to turn the key the right way. And a lot of times they can't even find the car door. So. But, you know, what I think they'll do if they're smart is slow, steady, investigate the corruption of the administration.
Right.
They'll go after the things that have been covered up and obstructed by Devin Nunes and others, and, of course, the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
And they'll go through this thing methodically and without a lot of drama, because the drama is in the corruption and the charges and the relations with Russia and all those other things. Let the record talk to people about it. Right. I think when the facts come out, it's going to be an incredibly damaging time. And there's a lot of stuff that's pay to play in this administration that is going to come out, you know, in the coal industry and all those things. And I think it's going to be, a harder burden for the president to fight back against 20 small battles than one mega battle.
Yeah, exactly. And in the whole impeachment idea, just everyone back off. Okay?
It's just not, I mean, look, does Donald Trump engage in impeachable behavior? Yeah. Guess what? You can pass it in the House. Let's say the Democrats took 100% of the House tomorrow. Great. It's got to go to the Senate. You got to have 2/3.
Nothing's going to happen
and
in the Senate.
And there is no math that gets you to 2/3 in the U.S. Senate. There is no math that gets you there right now.
Exactly. Our good friend, Drive Hall of Famer, GOP strategist, and I, again, remind everyone, GOP strategist, Rick Wilson. His new book is Everything Trump Touches Dies, A Republican Strategist Gets Real. about the worst president ever. He is in the Bay Area doing a book tour, and I want to talk about the book. We'll take our bottom of the hour break and come back with Rick Wilson. Rick, it's so great to meet you in person.
Likewise, my friend.
All right, we'll be back. Stay tuned. We're so excited in the studio with us, Drive Hall of Famer. He's with us all the time on the phone, but he's in the Bay Area promoting his book, Everything Trump Touches Dies. A Republican strategist gets real about the worst president ever. He is Rick Wilson. Honor to meet you in person, sir.
Likewise, my friend.
So let's talk about the book. It really is cool, and I need you to sign it for me.
I will do so.
Yes.
You bet.
You, back in 2016, you became pretty well known as a never Trump guy. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but you were not a fan of Trump. You called him an insecure dictator. And
he puts the dick in dictator.
Yes, he does, sir. Thank you. I like that. And talk about the book and what made you write it. And believe me, it pulls no punches just from the title.
No, Steve, I decided to write this book because I knew there would be a million critiques of Donald Trump from the left.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easiest thing. It's like taking candy from a Trump. It would have been like a slow pitch over the plate, right? But I knew that there was not going to be a ton of critique from the right. And I knew that most of the people that were going to write those critiques are great guys, smart guys, friends of mine, you know, Max Boot and David Frum, these guys, really great writers. But most of them were either from the academic side of politics,
right,
and I'm from the internal trench warfare side of politics.
Exactly.
And I also knew that I had a certain degree of latitude in the way I speak and write. People know that I'm like a damn pirate, and that I have that my language is salty and direct, and that I can have some fun with this that a lot of other people couldn't.
And by the way, we have a delay button Mike can push if you want to get salty. Well, I mean, again, pulling no punches right from the title, Everything Trump Touches Dies, a Republican strategist gets real about the worst president ever. People who purchase this book, and they certainly should, talk about what's inside this book. And you know.
Sure. Well, I mean, Steve, the book has an analysis of who enabled Donald Trump to become president, the Vichy Republicans, as I call them, mm-hmm. these people that sold out everything they ever claimed they believed in. And whether those people were the establishment guys like Reince Priebus and the Washington lobbyists, or whether it was the economic purists who said that, you know, we have to have low deficits and we have to have fiscal discipline, or whether it was the evangelicals who suddenly somehow found in the Book of Trump, chapter 7, verse 9, that a desirable characteristic of an evangelical leader was that you were a damn whoremonger. And so, you know, I call out the folks that enabled him and that excused him to come to power, and the folks in the media who gave him the attention and the focus and the uplift he needed for $1 billion worth of free media.
Mm-hmm.
Then I talk about how the White House has been a train wreck from the first day. You know, how you don't normally lose 8 cabinet members in the first year and a half of office.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sign not of bad cabinet members, but of bad management. And I go through a lot of the people that, you know, surround this man and the basic, you know, horrible. I almost had to have you use that mute button.
He's got his finger on the button in case you need it.
This horrible crap tier array of people around him that are just there. You look, most of these guys, you wouldn't hire them to manage an Arby's, much less run the federal government. These are people that when Trump goes away, they're going to have trouble getting jobs at Bass Pro Shop. They're not qualified or smart or good people. You know, they happen to be either relations or suck up to Donald Trump, and that's what keeps them in where they are now.
Yeah, because that's all he cares about, really.
It is. The guy's ego is the only thing that he wants to feed every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a friend of mine once said, Donald Trump cares about three things. What makes him feel like a star, what makes him money, and what gives him an erection that day. Those are the three characteristics that Donald Trump cares about of anything. You can always predict how he's going to behave based on one of those three tests.
As far as the erection goes, apparently, according to Stormy Daniels, his Johnson is pretty small.
Well, you know, Steve, one of the things I never thought I'd talk about live on the air.
And I never thought I would go here in this conversation.
Is,
but
is
what,
the
I'm
presidential
sorry,
wedding tackle. But here we are in the era of Trump.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I don't know. I know you got a gig tonight. It's a pop-up book signing at Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco starting at 7. You're going to love them.
So I'm told.
They've been on the show before.
Right? So I'm told it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
It's very cool. The book, Everything Trump Touches Dies, A Republican Strategist Gets Real About the Worst President Ever. Besides all the crap that happened today and is going to continue to probably happen unless he tones down his hate speech and rhetoric.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. What do you see going forward? Let's say even in the next, after the midterms.
Look, I still think, for all the smartassery of my writing and my style and the way I talk, I do believe this is a good and resilient country. And I do believe that although the damage he's done has been extensive and terrible, that there needs to be a point where as a people and as a country, we sort of sit back and have, and I hate this phrase in national dialogue, but we need to sit back as a country and take a deep breath and decide if this is how we want to live and this is the politics we want and this is the way we want government and leadership to behave. And there are going to be people that are going to want this reality TV show to continue.
But it's like a third of the...
But fortunately, it's a minority, and it's held together by the celebrity magic of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you had somebody else trying to be a Trump, there is no Trumpism without Trump. There's no acceptability to the behavior and the rhetoric of Donald Trump unless you're a reality TV star with a gazillion Twitter followers. Most of these guys would be laughed off the stage if they tried it. Thankfully.
For 2 years, I've been waiting for Gary Busey and Meatloaf to be part of the White House.
I think Gary Busey, Meatloaf, and Ted Nugent together represent a bold new direction in governance in this country. and aside from the utter chaos that would cause, it would be amusing for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Celebrity Apprentice, West Wing Edition.
There you go. Oh, it's frightening, isn't it, Rick?
You know, every day I wake up and I think two things. Well, I'm still here, so he hasn't nuked me or anything else. Although the chance of nuclear war with Belgium is rising by the minute. And the next thing I think is, oh, dear God, what's he going to tweet now?
Every morning I get up and I turn on my TV to CNN and go, now what?
You know, for about a week last week, the hurricane came very near to our home in Florida and knocked our power out for 5 days.
Wow.
And it knocked the Sprint cell phone towers in my area down too. So I'm in a black hole for 5 days.
Oh, that's horrible.
And it's like I had to go stand on the roof to get cell signal. I have a three-story house, so I'm up on the roof of my house. I'm like, I could see it. I could see the whole story like playing out, like first time author dies in tragic fall. But you know, when I came out of 5 days and suddenly it was just like all of the crap. And it's like a compressed dose of this amateur, grotesque, vile human being. And I think, you know, as a Republican, I'm disgusted. As a conservative, I'm repulsed. As an American, I'm just exhausted. So, you know, that's why I'm in the fight. That's why I wrote the book. I want to keep talking to people about, you know, where we go from here. How do you get past this? How do you get past Trump and Trumpism? And while it's going to be a long journey, I think it's a worthwhile one.
Amen. Amen. Everything Trump touches dies. A Republican strategist gets real about the worst president ever. I can't wait to read this book. I'm just finishing Bill Press's latest book.
Oh, yeah.
Trump Must Go.
Trump Must Go. Yeah. Yep. It's good.
we have lunch with him every time we're in D.C., and we did, and that the book's great. But I can't wait to read this. Rick will be doing a book signing at Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco starting at 7 tonight. Again, I want to thank Gary Buffo and all the folks at Pure Luxury Limousine for helping us out so we could get Rick, a Drive Hall of Famer who's with us all the time on the phone, up from Corte Madera and then back to San Francisco for this event at 7. How are we doing on time, and how's Rick doing on time? We good? Yeah. Yeah, go
a little while longer.
Okay. We taking a break? No, we're going, baby.
Boom!
We are
rolling.
Going. I don't know. What else is on your mind as far as all this madness?
Well, look, I think that, you know, 2 weeks from now, we're going to see a different political landscape in this country. But I don't think it's going to be an easier political landscape. I think people, especially people on the Democratic side, need to be mindful of the fact that in some ways, Nancy Pelosi being the speaker and the Democrats being in the majority is great for Trump. It lets him have a daily villain who he can put out there every day, and he can play this game that he plays to keep his base in line. I think she has the opportunity to bring a lot of pain in the meantime, legitimately. Because, look, you know, all my friends are like, why are, you know, the Democrats are going to win and da-da-da-da-da. Aren't you sad that we're going to lose the Republican majority? And I'm like, listen, I'd be delighted to keep the majority as a conservative if Republicans in the House were doing their damn jobs.
Right, yeah.
And if they didn't act like a bunch of junior managers at a Trump golf course. You know, Mr. Trump, can I wash your car today? Like the Biff Tannens of politics.
And, Back to the Future. And that's a great reference, dude.
And none of these people... you know, who have sat there and obstructed justice and have tried to do everything they could, they're not acting like a co-equal branch of government.
Right.
They're acting like they work for him. And I'm sorry, as a conservative, I honor the fact that we have a tripartite government with a separation of powers and a balance of the powers of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. These guys act like everything stems from Trump HQ at the White House, and everything must be, you know, governed according to that.
Is it all about them wanting to get reelected?
A lot of it's about them just being afraid of Trump and Trump's base.
Wow.
And, you know, a lot of the ones that, you know, we've got 44 retirements on the Republican side this year. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
A lot of those people were the ones with like a shred of moral decency who were just like, I can't be a part of this.
Right.
I'm done. I'm out. You know, yeah, I hope
Jeff Flake has been amazing.
Jeff has been a guy who has played out a moral journey on live television.
Yeah.
And he has had a lot of difficulties, you know, trying to reconcile the fact that he's still a conservative, he's still a Republican.
And so are you.
And reconciling that to what Trumpism is completely like the nut of the whole question. That's really the core of this problem, is nothing about Donald Trump makes it easy to be a Republican or a conservative. And there's no joy there. There's no happy warrior there. There's no Ronald Reagan cheerful optimism.
Right,
there's
right.
no George H.W. Bush decency and humanity. There's no George W. Bush, who people may have disagreed with Bush on a lot of things, but at the end of the day, George W. Bush didn't come across as a guy you didn't want to sit down and have a beer with.
I agree completely, and I long for the George W. Bush days.
Let me tell you know, compassionate conservatism was out of fashion after W.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth of the matter was that was trying to find a path for the Republicans to reach out to younger people and Hispanics and African Americans and folks who weren't traditional Republican voters. Well, now, guess what? All those groups will crawl over broken glass to vote against Donald Trump or Donald Trump's candidates, and will for a very long time.
Unbelievable. He's got a book signing tonight at Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco starting at 7. GOP strategist Rick Wilson. The book is Everything Trump Touches Dies. A Republican strategist gets real about the worst president ever. He really is the worst president ever. At least in my lifetime, I don't know.
Polk and Grant, there are a few other.
Yeah, you know, apparently people Polk was kind of an a-hole, but
that are in the stack. but certainly he's the worst president of the modern era.
Right.
I mean, Richard Nixon was an amateur compared to this guy in terms of corruption. And Nixon actually did some things that had merit. China, rolling up Vietnam, pursuing the, you know, the development of the EPA. You can look at the spectrum of accomplishments versus the demerits and say the demerits still outweigh it on Nixon. But this guy, Donald Trump, is a spectacularly bad president in every axis. He's not good at leadership. He's not good at bringing the nation together. I mean, God forbid we have another 9/11. Because this guy, you know, on that day, you know, the test that was put out to leaders like Bush and to Giuliani, who, you know, stood there and in the days that followed 9/11, they did everything they could to pull the nation back together. This guy's only instinct is to divide. His only instinct is to break. His only instinct is for himself. He's inwardly directed on every single question.
Yeah.
And so as a president, I think you put the nation at risk if you have somebody like that who stays in office and governs accordingly.
You worked for Giuliani. Talk about him and what you think he's become in this situation with Trump.
That's one of the abiding mysteries of a lot of people who were around him, who worked for him longer than I did, or friends with him longer than I was. And I was with him for a long time, from 97 through 2008. I worked, you know, for a Senate campaign, his mayor's campaign, his presidential race. And I worked inside City Hall as a senior advisor to the mayor. And the person that I always observed about Rudy, and I used to use this analogy a lot, Rudy was Batman in New York.
And after 9/11, certainly. You
know, even during the turnaround of the city in the 90s, Rudy was Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
He was tough. He would push things really hard, but he was the guy you needed. He could be a bastard, but he was the bastard you needed right that minute.
In Times Square, right? That was one of his things.
Exactly.
Where Times Square turned from the sleaziest place in Manhattan to a tourist area.
It was even broader than that. There were these porn shops all over New York City that were within a quick walk of schools, and a lot of them were involved in trafficking and all these other things, and he cleaned them up. And he cleaned them up because he said, look, this is a city where families have to live. We're going to be a viable city. Families have to be able to live here. And so he did that, and he cleaned up the streets in a lot of ways. And that Batman role was a good description of him because I didn't always have to like the tactics, but the result was for the greater good. But what you're seeing now, and it saddens a lot of people that are friends of his, and it saddens me, frankly, is the legacy of a man who cleaned up the biggest city in the country, turned it around from a terrifyingly bad situation, and a man who on 9/11 stood there and in one brief press conference
became America's mayor.
He unified the city at that moment. He quieted the sense that the city was in collapse. He was one man standing there saying, we're going to make it. We're going to be okay. And, you know, if Rudy at that moment had been struck by lightning and dropped down dead, he would have been a heroic figure in America's political landscape. He would have been a heroic figure. But now, unfortunately, the everything Trump touches dies effect is hitting him. And, you know, he's no longer looked at as a person who, you know, has those things in his past, but only the Trumpishness of today. It's a sad thing, and it saddens me. And like I said, it saddens a lot of his close friends and former senior people.
Yeah.
You know, all of us talk back and forth, and it's just like it's an abiding and horrible mystery.
I have talked to many other people about this situation with Rudy. People who knew him, or at least are so politically astute that they are watching everything, and this whole thing with the Trump situation, as Rudy is one of his attorneys or his personal attorney.
Yeah.
We talk about, and I say with all due respect, and I hope it's not the case, but do you think there's some dementia going on, early stage?
You know, I'm not
because he seems so weird.
I'm not going to play doctor on this. I'm really not.
Well, you're on the radio. You can play doctor on the radio. I do too.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the radio.
Exactly.
But what I think is, what I think is happening here, is that being around Trump and being in the very center of this media maelstrom that Trump creates is exciting. And Rudy had been out of the spotlight for a few years.
Yeah.
You know, and had been out of the day-to-day excitement of a big fight, and he likes a big fight. So I don't know. I can't diagnose his difficulties.
Of course.
But it is certainly notable. This is not the guy we knew 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. The book is Everything Trump Touches Dies. A Republican strategist gets real about the worst president ever. He is Mr. Rick Wilson. He's going to be at Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco around 7 tonight. He's got to get back in the limo. And again, thanks to Gary Buffo and everyone at Pure Luxury. And Rick, it's just a total honor. And it's been an honor having you as a Drive Hall of Famer and on the phone all these months and years.
I'm delighted to join you guys anytime. I really appreciate coming out today and for having me on and to get to talk about everything Trump touches dies.
All right. And again, the best place to get the book?
You can get it at any independent bookstore. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and available on all the digital formats on Apple and Google and everything else. And we've been delighted with the reception. It hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list a couple weeks after it came out.
Yeah.
And sales have been continued to be strong. Really happy with that. And I appreciate you guys having me on today.
It's our pleasure. And next time you're in the Bay Area, we'll get the limo going again, and hopefully you can come in.
I would love to do that.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Rick Wilson, Everything Trump Touches Dies. Great to meet you, man, in person.
Likewise.